interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Thursday, August 22nd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off from our favorite Thursday hangout place, the Taproom River Ranch. Glad to have you on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here, and for the next 2.5 hours, and a little kicker on the end before the Astros, the famous Glenn D will join me from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Yes, we are in the throes of football season. We're all excited about it. I'm going to lead with it a little bit on LSU internally and then externally as they prepare for the Georgia Southern Eagles, and a starting quarterback has been named for the Raging Cajuns. Opening opposition. That's right. Mississippi State has its man. I'll tell you all about it in our lead segment, but I have to fit in a little baseball. Trust me, I will. At the end of our opening run here. I know. I get it. It's football season, but when interesting things are happening with the Houston Astros, and a lot of that qualifies from last night and into today, got to make sure to kick it your way. But we start with football. On the LSU front, you heard it during the two-minute drill, getting ready for Georgia Southern. Yesterday's kind of the line of demarcation. It's that line in the sand where coaches say, okay, that's enough of figure out who our best players are. Maybe not totally enough, but by and large it's enough, right? You're still going to have competition, sort of. Mainly it's about preparing for that opener now. Billy Napier said it about what the Cajuns would be doing. He said it starts Wednesday this week. Similar for LSU. And so while they'll still survey a couple of position battles, really it's about the next team on the schedule. And obviously, that is the Georgia Southern Eagles. A week from Saturday in Tiger Stadium, I mentioned you heard it during the two-minute drill, Jontre Kirkland, stud athlete at Letcher High School. He has spent time on both sides of the foot. He has been getting this defense ready, putting it through its paces by simulating the Eagles' option quarterback. I love that, but one thing I'll remind everybody, that's how you win jobs in the future. And so right now, it's Kirkland kind of manning this position. But when everybody sees what you can do with the ball in your hands enough, well, they start to get ideas. And so I'll just throw that out there for you. He might be simulating Georgia Southern, that offense, what the option looks like. But don't doubt for one second that he's also given a nice test drive to what it would look like with Kirkland handling the rock for LSU this year coming out of the slot. So I mentioned the competition. It's starting to die down at least a little bit as far as who's our best player at every position. It's not completely dead. And these are some opportunities, some precious ones, in fact, for Kirkland maybe to make a case competing with somebody like Trey Palmer, even an upperclassman like Derek Dillon in the slot. Some more from LSU's camp. Out yesterday along the defensive line, Braden Fajoco, Tyler Shelvin. On the offensive line, Chasen Hines. And at tight end, Stephon Sullivan. These were the type of details we didn't get from Glenn Gilbo because, as he told you, like Allen Iverson, we're talking about practice. He doesn't go to practice. He does big picture. I'll dig down into the practice notes for you. Even though those four players were out, Ed Ogeron saying after yesterday, late afternoon's practice, he expects them all back for the third and final scrimmage of fall camp this Saturday at Tiger Stadium. And so as we see the NFL, it's not even slowly anymore, as we see the NFL quickly seep into the college game, this is one that, don't confuse it, because it is as clear as day to me, the third preseason game is the most important. It's the one where you play your starters the most, your final tune-up. Same thing for this third scrimmage. I know a lot of emphasis was put on the second one, but boy, a lot of players missed that scrimmage. Everybody by and large, is supposed to be healthy for this one, according to Ed Ogeron. Obvious exception being Cardale Thomas at offensive guard. They should have all hands on deck for this Saturday's scrimmage. And one other note, Dante Starks, freshman out of John Arrett, an inside linebacker, according to Ed O, very close to gaining academic eligibility. I would say that due to the position he plays, I don't know how much it's going to matter. He would have to be some kind of stud to leapfrog Damone Clark, Patrick Queen, Jacob Phillips. I don't know that that's going to happen, but the opportunity to play in at least four games and still take a red shirt would exist. And, hey, if he gets out there in special teams, bust enough skulls, who knows what will happen for Dante Starks. But it looks like there's a chance that one of the most celebrated, highly rated defensive players, other than Derek Stingley Jr., in this LSU class, looks like he might become eligible sooner than later. We'll switch over from LSU to the Raging Cajuns. We know Mississippi State meeting Billy Napier and the Cajuns in the Superdome less than 9 days from right now. Yeah, that's right. The 31st at not high noon, but an hour prior at 11 a.m. And on the other sideline, this probably won't surprise all of you. You'd have told me this a month ago. It would have surprised me, though. Tommy Stevens has been named the starting quarterback for Joe Moorhead and the Cowbell crew. Now, why is that significant? A couple of reasons. One, I think a lot of people, you know, like me a month ago, expected that guy would be Keaton Thompson, a New Orleans native, a guy that led one of the most potent offenses and state champions we've seen in quite some time, and Landry Walker a few seasons back. He's a stud. He was pretty darn good on the hardwood. He is a heck of a lot better as a dual-threat quarterback. And no, you know, coincidence that he was recruited by Dan Mullen to Starkville. But now Joe Moorhead is the head hombre in Stark Vegas. He comes from Penn State, and so too did Tommy Stevens, a transfer from Happy Valley, and he still ranks eighth all-time on the Penn State rushing QB list. That's a list you're going to have to dig to find, but it does exist. So this is another mobile quarterback, one that's familiar with what Joe Moorhead likes to do. So for the Cajuns fans, that'll be heading to New Orleans in a little more than a week. And I'm raising my hand. I'll be there at that ball game in the Superdome. Pretty excited about it. It'll be Tommy Stevens taking the first snaps, and you would presume most, if not all, of the snaps for the Bulldogs going up against Ron Roberts' defense. We'll have more next week on exactly what that shift means and how the Cajuns' defense will be affected by it. So a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some LSU, some UL to start the program. But I want to at least introduce the Astros-related topics, and then we'll have an expert on the matter in about 35 minutes. But last night, despite being historic favorites, minus 550 favorites, to beat the Detroit Baseball Tigers in Minute Maid, the Stros lost a heartbreaker. Justin Verlander, his first complete game of the year, 11 strikeouts. He has been incredible lately. He took the L, and then after the game, public perception, depending on who's reporting it, that happens too often these days, would tell you that he took a few more L's. There was a reporter from the Detroit Free Press that Houston Astros security wouldn't let into the locker room post-game to interview JV. Part of this was at the behest of Justin Verlander, of course, a multiple-time Cy Young Award winner and all-time great for the Detroit Tigers. And what's interesting about it is Verlander came out on Twitter, defended himself a couple of times over today, saying leading into the series, he tried to contact the Detroit Free Press, asked them not to have this guy come and cover because of inappropriate behavior, at least as JV perceives it, when those two dealt with each other in the past. Well, that fell on deaf ears. Verlander claims he has tried to contact the Free Press up in Detroit again today, and they're not taking his side of the story. They're not taking his calls. Intriguing storyline. And we're going to dip into that later in this hour as we also are going to do with the news of the day. And this is not good. That vaunted bullpen for the Astros starting to fall apart a little bit. Ryan Pressly, he's going to require arthroscopic knee surgery. And so your eighth inning man, setup guy, done for at least 4 to 6 weeks, if not longer. This time a year ago, Stroh's would still have had recourse. That second deadline, quote-unquote, that would have taken you through the month of August, the one that allowed the Astros to get Verlander this time 2 years ago, no longer exists. That window has closed, and so right now the Astros are going to be doing a wee bit of scrambling, and that's not great news for the back end of that bullpen. Let me give you our guest list today. I've hinted at it a few times. We'll have Astros royalty on the program at 4:45. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle texted back and forth with Chandler at about 9:30 this morning. He said, it's my day off. I'll come on whenever you need me. As soon as the Presley news broke, he said, I am required in the newsroom. Push me back to 4:45. So, Houston, I don't know if we have a problem, but we've got some news. And Chandler's going to report on it with you at 4:45. At straight up 5 o'clock, we'll begin our weekly hits with LSU football sideline reporter Gordy Rush. So Gordy joining us at 5, one of our favorites on the Cruton beat, Sam Spiegelman, coming aboard at 5:30, and we're taking you all the way until Astro launch today at 6:35. Big program, Chandler Rome, Gordy Rush, and Sam Spiegelman all piling into the huddle. So stay right where you're at. Bumper to Bumper Sports, we'll be right back out to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing, playing in with that music. And Clint, what do I tell you every single time that you come back from break with this song? What do I tell you every single time?
Just always play it.
Yes. When in doubt, play it some more. So I love that you're heeding the call. We got some great topics coming at you. At 4:30, we'll dive into the SEC upper echelon of head coaches. At 4:45, a visit with Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, talking about the latest with the Astros, a little drama with Justin Verlander. But right now, I want to get to the New Orleans Saints. They're getting ready for preseason game 3 at the Jets this weekend. First, before we let you hear from the Saints, let's talk about the guys who were out today and the unit that dominated on Airline Drive in Metairie. According to our good friend Luke Johnson with the USA Today Network, read him locally in the Daily Advertiser. Here are the players he didn't see participating earlier this morning. Latavius Murray, Saquon Hampton, Marcus Sherrills, Alex Anzalone, Craig Robertson, Mario Edwards, and Marshall Newhouse. A couple of those guys, it's been a couple of practices in a row. Saquon Hampton, the rookie defensive back, he'll need to stay in the mix in practice, to stay in the mix for the 53-man. Latavius Murray, his spot is secure after the departure of Mark Ingram, but it's worth noting. Marcus Sherrills, he's been out most of this week as well, if memory serves. He came over in the offseason for the Minnesota Vikings, expected to man the punt return and kick return duties for Sean Payton's team. So they'll need him back in time for the opener on Monday Night Football, September the 9th. And then obviously a couple linebackers there. Craig Robertson, maybe a little more towards special teams duty. Alex Anzalone, they need him and his flowing locks back as soon as possible. But the other interesting thing, Clint, before we play some sound bites from Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, and Taysom Hill, those are all offensive players you may have noticed. All reports today coming out of Metairie is that the Saints defense put on an absolute clinic. The Saints defense owned the practice this morning. According to Luke Johnson again, that defense just shut down Drew Brees and the starting offense not once but twice consecutively inside the red zone. Luke reporting that Von Bell having a large time with the affairs on Airline Drive. And so interesting. And, you know, frankly, refreshing. If I were to read reports that said Michael Thomas is having his way with the Saints secondary, it wouldn't surprise me from the Michael Thomas standpoint. It would ever so slightly demoralize me from the Saints secondary standpoint. Dude's a freak, but, you know, the Saints secondary is looking to prove a point that it is a strength of the team, as so many of our analysts have said throughout the last month. And I'm also not worried about the Saints' offense. I think we all realize that. Even without Mark Ingram, I think they're going to be fine toting the rock. They're becoming a little more of a run-heavy attack, but everything that's there in the passing game that you could ask for is returning, plus the addition of Jared Cook. So I'm just not worried about the Saints' offense. I like reading. I like hearing, and I like seeing that the defense is taking steps forward. Speaking of hearing, you're going to hear right now from Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas his take on what a third preseason game can mean for a franchise.
Yeah, it's exciting just to be out there with the starting 11 and know the guys that, you know, I'm going to compete with all season long, just to get that, get started, get off to a fast start, and work on our tempo and get out all the wrinkles before week one.
And that's the one, I guess, feather in the cap of a play breeze in the preseason argument, at least the third game of the preseason, that I would make, right? That's a feather that I would put in that cap. Breeze playing isn't necessarily for him. It's for everybody else around him, right? It's for Michael Thomas. It's for the younger receivers. It's especially for Jared Cook and maybe some of these offensive linemen, a la new center Eric McCoy. Breeze being out there is really for those guys. And so Thomas, to his point, I'm right there with him. It's about the ones running together. One interesting storyline for this weekend and a trip to the Meadowlands, Saints taking on the Jets and defensive coordinator Greg Williams. Yeah, we know that name. And Michael Thomas says we got something for him.
For sure. We went against Greg last year, week one, when he was at Cleveland. We have a lot of film on him, and our coaching staff is prepared.
Short and sweet. Let's keep it on the offensive side. Let's keep it with guys that are going in the first round of fantasy drafts. Alvin Kamara up next, AK-41. Look, preseason's great, but he says we really want to get after it when it matters.
It's a certain point you reach in camp where you're tired of hitting your teammates. You know what I'm saying? You want to go against another team, and that's what preseason is for. But you know, we want to go for, you know, when it really counts. You know, like Monday night, that's the first game of our season, and you know, of course, we're ready for that. But we still have time. We got things we need to correct. We got things we need to get better at.
Let's get more sound from the Saints. Here's Kamara on his teammate, the guy you just heard from, Michael Thomas. The level of route running, where he's at, and how he's growing.
Yeah, but I don't think I can do him all. He can run any route on the route tree. He's running them hard, everyone. Some of them breaks he be getting into, I don't know how to do that. I can't make my body do that, but I try. You know, but, I mean, just watching him, he's explosive. In every route, I mean, every one of his routes starts off, it looks the same. I mean, that's why I think these corners and these safeties have a tough time guarding them, is because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get with them.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. I promise you, there's a lot that Kamara can do with his body that Thomas can't. So the reciprocal is true as well there. I've said it before, and I'll say it again on Michael Thomas. The defining characteristic to me of 13 in the black and gold, it's not necessarily just the great hands. It's not, quote-unquote, the route running. It's the body position. And once he gets you like a great power forward, it's over with. I mean, he just gets in tremendous position, and once you give Breeze that target, again, it's over. All right, let's get a little from Taysom Hill before our second break of the program. He wants to be used, and he feels like he's going to be used more and more as a quarterback this year, not necessarily a jack of all trades. This has been a big topic for us the last couple of weeks. Here's what Taysom has to say on it.
You know, for the last month or however long we've been in training camp, the mindset has been progressing as a quarterback, making sure that I can, you know, really trying to catch to where Drew is at and be able to function at a high level that way. And as we start to near the end of camp, you know, my mindset starts to shift to making sure that I can take care of all the responsibilities that I'll be asked to do this season. And, you know, as we get closer, I start to think about it. And it's certainly exciting. You know, I think a lot of the excitement just comes from knowing that we're getting ready to start another season, which is really exciting.
Quickly, while I've got a moment, let's take two. With Taysom Hill, he continues to be compared with Steve Young. I'm not overly fond of the on-field comparison, but certainly they both played at BYU. And here, Hill goes a little deeper. His relationship with the former 49ers, great.
When I was at BYU, we finished the game. We won. It was a good game. And I got a text from an unknown number. I didn't have it saved, and I didn't know who it was. And so I was just like, I don't know what to really say to this, because I don't know who it is. And then a few weeks by, and I got another message, and then it signed off as Steve. And I quickly realized that it was Steve Young. And so Steve's been one of those guys that, you know, I think the connection to BYU is strong, and he's been a guy that's been really good about reaching out to and offering advice to the guys that play at the program, and I wasn't an exception to that, and since then, you know, we've had conversations.
Hey, nothing like an anonymous text that turns out to be from Steve Young. All right, we're halfway home for our 4 o'clock hour. Don't forget, in about 18 minutes, an interview with Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, the latest on the Astros. And also, don't forget, they got live music here tonight, 8 until 11. No cover charge, just a great time. You start your weekend early. And for the final time, the Saturday Summer Music Series rides. It's 8 to 11 this Saturday. Same drill. No cover charge. Just come watch Ariana Lyons. Hey, she works here a lot behind the bar. She's really good with the microphone as well. So come out and support her. Have a great time this Saturday night, all at the Tap Room, River Ranch. We'll be back in before our date with Chandler. Talking Stros, let's go in on the SEC football coaching hierarchy. We'll get to it next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, bouncing right back to the Tap Room, River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And right back into the Tap Room River Ranch, 34 minutes after 4 o'clock. We've got an important question for you. It's the time of year where teams in the college football level are between their second and third scrimmage. Of course, if you're Florida and Miami, you've already had three scrimmages in the rear view. You're playing week zero football on Saturday. But for everybody else, you're just trying to stay healthy and start game prep for the season opener. And so that allows me to step back and allows us to take stock of the best doing it in the SEC. We've barked up this tree before, but now that we're really on the precipice and about to fall into this 2019 season, let's go down this road again. Let's have some fun with it. CD, got a great question. It always plays right after the music does.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day. How do you rank the SEC's top head coaches after Nick Saban? So take the Nick Tater and Tuscaloosa out of it. I don't need you to call and give me 2 through 14. Ditto for Facebook and Twitter. But give me the next few in line, the way you view it, and where Ogeron fits in. Let's have some fun with this one. Don't make us wait. Call now. 706-0111. Clint, I'm on the road. I think that means I'm away, so you can hit first.
All right, the home team's going to bat first. Why not kind of get things started off right? We got to go with Dan Mullen. I feel like he's the second-best head coach in all the SEC. I think he's definitely been able to prove himself a lot more with the Florida job and also the Mississippi State job. Because if you're able to turn Mississippi State around and make them a power, definitely got something going in your favor. You better imagine what he does year two with the Florida Gators. Third, I think we got to go Kirby Smart. I think that one seems too easy. You could probably intersperse between 2 and 3, you can definitely have a debate there. But number 4, we got to go Jimbo Fisher out of the SEC West, Texas A&M Aggies head coach. In his second year, he's starting to build things up, starting to really work that recruiting trail. And that's going to take some stuff from number 5. And I feel like Coach O is 5th in the hierarchy, at least in my mind.
See, we didn't compare notes here, but I'm fascinated with what you came up with because we have, by and large, the same men, but in a slightly different order. I'll say this. I'll define some terms here. I didn't even consider in this conversation Chad Morris at Arkansas, Matt Luke at Ole Miss, Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee, although his time could come. Didn't really consider Barry Odom at Mizzou, nor Derek Mason at Vandy. I didn't put Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State in, but I'm not sleeping on him either. I give him every opportunity to get into the upper half of this conference. But just going through this exercise made me realize, you know, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in the late 90s, early aught decade anymore, where this was just the bastion of coaching. nationwide, right? When you could throw in national championship winners at a lot of different outposts, it's different now. I just took half the league's coaches and said, I'm not considering you. It's a different game. But, yes, Saban's at the top. There are a total of seven other coaches that I kind of put into the hat here and shook them around a little bit, if you will. I ended up coming up, CD, with Stoops and Muschamp on the outside looking in, but I ranked what I thought were maybe the next five in line after Saban. Give me Kirby Smart as the second best right now. I know. I went to Georgia. Homer Radio, you're going to tell me. That's the third best program in college football right now. That's what I'm going to tell you. Ahead of Oklahoma, ahead of Ohio State. That's how it breaks down. It's Clemson and Bama in whatever order you want them. Take them tied for first if you like. I wouldn't argue with you. It's Georgia third. And then it's some order of Oklahoma and Ohio State, and everybody else is starting to claw and jockey for position. Kirby Smart has done it on the recruiting trail. He's been able to capture more of his backyard, in my opinion, than his predecessor Mark Richt was able to do. And there still are national tentacles, right? They're going up to Philly and getting a guy like DeAndre Swift. But really and truly, they're becoming beasts in Georgia, Florida, and South Carolina, even more than they were under the previous regime. It's kind of like the opposite of Coach O, to be honest, who's going more nationwide with great success. But give me Kirby Smart at two. The recruiting's translated on the field in a big way. I'll take Jimbo Fisher at number three. I've been big on him for a long, long time. And I think he's going to have a lot of success at Texas A&M. I think LSU A&M will become one of the best rivalries in all of college football. And certainly he is the straw that stirs the drink. Give me Fisher, the recruiter and the quarterback developer at three, just ahead of Dan Mullen at four. I respect you and where you had Mullen, but I think he's got to prove that he can steer the Lamborghini a little bit. We've seen what he's done with the Pinto in Starkville. Let's see what happens now when you're giving the reins to something that's got a whole hell of a lot of horsepower. Because ask Urban Meyer. Ask some of the coaches that have been there in recent years. McElwain, Muschamp. Already mentioned his name in this segment. Sometimes that horsepower could steer you instead of you steering it. But give me Mullen at four, and here's your ultimate cop-out. I'm going tied for fifth right now, but there is a twist to it. Give me Gus Malzahn and Ogeron tied for fifth. However, here's your twist. One of those guys is on the come up. Ogeron is major stock up. Malzahn has been in kind of Miles-ish territory for quite some time. We all know that he almost got the axe in that famous DJ Chark game on the Plains. The winner of that one, well, they kept their coach. And Malzahn has parlayed into more time in Auburn. But I do think that he's run the risk of things getting a little stale there. He'll have to start over quarterback again this year with no Jarrett Stidham. So if you're asking me which of those two I would take moving forward, the answer is Ogeron. So there you go, Clint. You and I came up with basically the same grouping, but a slightly different order. Any response to that?
You know, like I said, again, it's well, a lot of it has to do with the fact in the top three, in my mind, it feels like it's Dan Mullen and Kirby Smart. I can definitely get where you're coming from with Mullen, because of the fact he doesn't prove it a whole lot with the Florida job, but I think with the fact that he is able to start really kind of putting his feet in there, I think he can eventually be in control of, as you put it, the Lamborghini, the Ferrari, however you want to put it. But it feels like to me, with those two SEC East coaches, they're going to wind up starting to make some run. But I like the fact that we wind up kind of going with relatively the same guys below the Nictator, because it feels like those guys, that's where the power lies in the SEC.
Yeah, don't sleep on Jimbo. That's all I would tell you. I know a lot of our listeners disagree with me there. How do I know that? Because when Les Miles got fired and Ed Ogeron was the interim, I beat the drum for that guy. I thought he was the best candidate out there, better than Tom Herman, and I thought better than Ogeron and some of the stuff that was being floated. As I always told you, I thought Ogeron and, at the time, Joey Freshwater, Lane Kiffin as OC, I thought that was the best possible plan B, right? If you sit down at that proverbial poker table and Joe Oliva gets beaten by Jimmy Sexton again, imagine that, and you can't go out and find Jimbo Fisher. If Trace Armstrong causes you to have to make public statements that you didn't interview Tom Herman, can't believe that's a thing that actually happened in our recent history, but it did, then yeah, I thought this was the best possible plan B. It wasn't Lane Kiffin, it was Matt Canada. that disaster's over, and right now looks like greener pastures as Steve Ensminger, with the assistance of Joe Brady, leading an offense that I think has a real chance to look different and have different results this season. So a little exercise in ranking coaches. On the other side, totally different exercise. The Houston Astros lost a head-scratcher last night. We'll ask how that happened to Justin Verlander and exactly what happened after the game with JV and a reporter for the Detroit Free Press that was banned from the Stros locker room. You're not going to want to miss this interview. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And, of course, we're live at the Tap Room River Ranch.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
I love it. I love it. And it fits to a T, our next guest. Right back in. We are live from the Tap Room River Ranch, and that Michael Corleone bit right there, I know he whispered it. Hopefully you heard it. Just when I think I'm out, they pulled me back in. And aboard the Artco Equipment Hotline, that describes to a T. Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, just when you think it's a day off, you get called into the newsroom. Chandler, ain't that a bitch?
It is. You will not believe it. I have dinner plans tonight, so I have to hurry up and like this and then go to dinner because I'm not watching this game against this awful Detroit Tigers team.
We'll get you out of this interview quickly so you can write the story and then do the dinner. What exactly happened? We'll play the drama card first. What happened in the locker room last night with JV and the Detroit Free Press reporter?
So, full discretion, I was off last night as well, and I was not at the game, didn't see anything that happened. But from everything that's been out there, and you can read it for yourself, per the rules of the collective bargaining agreement, Major League clubhouses are supposed to open 10 minutes after the game, and every reporter is supposed to be granted access that has a legitimate credential. Justin Verlander apparently communicated to the Astros that he did not want a reporter from the Detroit Free Press to attend his news conference. That should not have in any way affected the Astros' handling, or should it have precluded him from going in the clubhouse. But the Astros decided to, you know, not let the Detroit Free Press reporter in the clubhouse, and that is a direct violation of the collective bargaining agreement. That's a direct violation of a lot of different things that go in with the Baseball Writers Association of America. It was a clear, just a blatant disregard for the rules. I imagine there will be some fallout, none of which will affect the on-the-field product at all, none of which will affect any sort of things that fans actually care about. But, you know, it's kind of an inside baseball, kind of how the sausage is made sort of thing with the post-game media availability and everything. There are rules that every club has to follow, and the Astros chose not to follow them last night. And I hope, as a fellow writer and reporter, I hope there are consequences.
So I'll ask you this. I guess your observations of Justin Verlander, kind of who he is maybe outside of baseball, just a lot of us don't have a lot of access to the guy. You have, so what do you know about him? Because I know he defended himself. He took to Twitter today to say, look, I've tried to reach out to the Detroit Free Press, and I've tried to give my side of the story. So tell us a little bit about who this guy is, other than somebody who mows down batters.
Yeah, and I even saw that Verlander's agent tried to call the Free Press yesterday before the game, and many times this morning as well, to kind of sort this out, and they never returned his call. You know, I don't know. I think this is – without – knowing the extent of the relationship between Verlander and the Free Press reporter, I don't want to comment a ton, but I mean, obviously they have some things they need to work out. And I think, you know, just as a reporter myself, I think it's fine when players don't want to talk to you. I think it's fine. They're allowed to decline interview requests. They're allowed to say no comment. They're allowed to do all that. But when you start directly going against the rules, and when you impede upon a reporter's job, which Who says he was going in there just to talk to Justin Verlander? He could have wanted to talk to Robinson Chirinos, who caught Justin Verlander, who made the final out of the game at third base. He could have wanted to talk to many other players that were in the clubhouse, and to delay him from getting in the clubhouse, especially a newspaper reporter that functions on deadline pretty regularly, as I know very well. It's just not a way to go about business, and the Astros pretty clearly went against a lot of rules yesterday. And like I said, I hope there's some sort of repercussion that they feel.
Fair enough. All right, we'll take it away from inside baseball. We'll just talk the sport itself. Our guest is Chandler Roma of the Houston Chronicle. The bigger news of the day that really is going to affect this team, Ryan Pressly, reliever for this team, setup man, eighth inning guy, going to require arthroscopic knee surgery, reportedly out 4 to 6 weeks. Do you think there's a chance he makes it back and is effective for a postseason run? And whether he does or he doesn't, Chandler, how does that affect the back end of the bullpen?
So Jeff Luhnow is cautiously optimistic that Ryan Pressly could appear in a couple of regular season games before the playoffs. But in meeting with reporters just now on the field, he did leave open the possibility that the worst-case scenario that they're planning for is that he may not be available for the American League Division Series. So that's the worst-case scenario. The best-case scenario would be that he returns for a couple of regular season games before the playoffs. I guess if you're an optimist, you could look somewhere in the middle there and say he doesn't pitch at all again this regular season and then is ready to go in the playoffs. I'm not sure how comfortable the Astros would feel, because I know Ryan Pressly is a good pitcher, but when you're down 6 weeks, I mean, that's a ton of time in baseball to not throw, to not be in there. You wonder how his stuff's going to come back, and you wonder if he's going to return to that elite form right away. But that's a little far off. I think for right now, I think what people are kind of missing is that, you know, this is just a seven-game lead in the division. They want to get home field advantage, and they want to get that number one seed. And you know, they still have to close some stuff out here, and they're not going to have Ryan Pressly for the foreseeable future. As far as the back end of the bullpen, A.J. Hinch kind of intimated today that he's going to keep Will Harris in his current role as a guy that he brings in when there's runners on. Harris is really good at stranding base runners, being kind of the fireman of that bullpen. And Roberto Osuna will obviously keep the ninth inning role. It's just going to kind of be, who is that bridge after Will Harris to Roberto Osuna? Joe Smith pitched better lately. Hector Rondon, I think if you look at his last 10 games, he's really skewed by that horrible opener start in Anaheim, because he's pitched really, really well the last couple of weeks, and they're going to really need him to continue pitching well, because he's probably got the stuff that can induce swing and miss as much as Pressly did, and I think that's what they're going to miss the most with Pressly, is that he spun the ball so well and he could play it off his fastball, but he was the best strikeout man in the bullpen, and he had the best swing and miss stuff in the bullpen. I don't know that there's a guy right now in the bullpen that can replicate it, but if there is anyone that could try, it's probably Hector Rondon with the high velocity, 97-98, and with a slider that when it's on, it's really good.
Let's finish with Yordan Alvarez. And Chandler, I was asked the other day by a caller, is there a chance he could be the AL Rookie of the Year? You know the landscape of the league better than me, even though he was called up later in the season. Is that possible?
Well, there's not only a chance. I'd probably label him as the favorite to be American League Rookie of the Year. Now, if he was in the National League, he'd have a lot of competition. Pete Alonso's over there doing unhuman things. Fernando Tatis Jr.'s had a great year. The Braves have a couple of guys. But in the American League, it's pretty much down to Yordan Alvarez, Mike Tauchman for the Yankees, who had a nice season. You look at a guy like Bo Bichette, who probably came up a little bit too late to be in consideration, but Bo Bichette's doing exactly what Yordan Alvarez did when Yordan Alvarez came up. But I think if Alvarez keeps up just a fraction of this, if he keeps up like half of the pace he's on right now, he's about to shatter Carlos Correa's rookie home run record in franchise history. Correa hit 22 in 2015, and Alvarez is at 19 right now with about 6 weeks left to play in the season. So he'll have that record, and Carlos Correa obviously won the American League Rookie of the Year in that year as well. So I would not only say there's a chance Alvarez went to American League Rookie of the Year, I'd say he's probably the favorite right now, barring an injury.
Excellent stuff, as always. Chandler, I know you're on a deadline. Thanks for doing this on an off day, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
He's the man, Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle, all over the Astros. Clint, God help me. I can't help myself. I want more inside baseball, not necessarily just on the Justin Verlander thread. This show has had the Detroit Free Press come out of its mouth enough for the first hour. That would certainly please the general manager at Delta Media, but for the rest of us, that'll probably be enough for at least a couple of years. But I feel like I require more inside baseball. You noticed that he said, you can't make me go cover this crappy Detroit Tigers team. I wonder if Chandler put in a request to be off for this home set, just knowing how bad the opponent was going to be. If so, that dude's out there just living life right.
Exactly. He probably did. The man is living his best life. He planned this out deliberately to make sure he doesn't even bother covering a series like this that was just going to be incredibly one-sided.
And you notice they roped it back in. So do me a favor. Yep. Cue up the Michael Corleone one time and then play it about 8 decibel levels higher so I can hear it at the tap room.
All right, give me a second.
Oh, it's not a sticky button. He wasn't ready on the spot. Okay. All right. You tell me when you're ready then.
All right, ready to roll.
Hit it.
Me back in. Just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in.
That's the best. We might have to make that just a little bit of a staple in the program. We might have to do that. Speaking of staples of the program, let's do a final word in this 4 o'clock hour.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make 2 chairs turn.
Familiarity. We gave this news at the tip-top of the hour, but Tommy Stevens has been named the starting quarterback for Mississippi State. Cajuns fans, take note. It won't be Keaton Thompson from the New Orleans area, but when the Cajuns play the Bulldogs in New Orleans, it'll be Tommy Stevens, former Penn State quarterback. The familiarity? Stevens used to play for Joe Moorhead when both of them were in Happy Valley. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in. Gordy Rush talking LSU football. It's straight up 5 o'clock. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one. We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love live from the Tap Room River Ranch. Glad to have you here. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Our first Thursday 5 p.m. hour leadoff installment of interviews with Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, coming at you. We don't have gimmicky music for it. We just have great content, and I think you're going to dig it. Gordy, welcome back in. How the heck are you?
Hey, Ben. Good to be with you.
All right, so give us an update on that side of the basin, an offensive line health update, and for you, some of the things that have happened so far in fall camp. Is it cause for concern with those guys?
Well, you know, offensive line, when you lose, you know, two potentially, I think they were hoping Chase and Hines would compete at that position with McGee, and obviously with Thomas, Cardell Thomas, who came in so high, you know, highly recruited. They were very deep at offensive line, so, you know, with the prospect of them banged up, and we'll see how long. You know, there's a little bit of concern there. You want to be deep on the offensive line. LSU has gotten by, you know, amazingly the last couple of years being thin there. I think that's the only place, you know, Ben. I know that the media likes to go in and do a roll call and stuff like that, but I'm of the belief and being around a little bit that a lot of this has just been preventative and that making sure that they're knocks and bruises during camp, but making sure that people get enough rest. They started a week early and they've got 2 bye weeks. It's a long season.
Hey, we know that it's at least fairly serious with Cardell Thomas, right? Your guys in the morning show announced maybe about 2 months. Has there been an update specific to Hines?
No, I haven't heard. And you know, so I haven't heard. Hines has been a little bit of a mystery, and obviously Coach Ogeron came out and said the serious nature with Cardell. But, you know, I mean, the hard thing with that is everybody rehabs different, right? And of course, they got to protect, Ed and Jack. They really don't disclose, I think, the injuries, and I respect that. But, it's a serious injury, so, at least a good part of the season. We'll see.
All right, Gordy, your fellow Blue Jay from Jesuit, Foster Morrow, has moved on from the program. He's with the Oakland Raiders now. We know this offense isn't using a true fullback anymore. So who are some of the guys like a Torrey Carter that can set the edge, and how might it look a little different this year?
Well, yeah, I don't know how many times they're going to set the edge. You know, most of what I've seen, and we saw spring game, and I think until we see differently, this seen a whole lot of spread. And unless Thaddeus Moss is the only guy that he's really been more of an inline tight end, McClendon maybe a little bit. But I think that they're so talented wide receiver. Stephon Sullivan gives you such a mismatch advantage when he's in the game that you're going to see more 3-4 wides than I think a flex tight end. And then they'll use Torrey Carter and perhaps Moss with some straight line. But, you're not going to try to, they don't have the tight ends on the roster, and I don't think you're going to see the sets that you did a year ago. Everything that I've seen has really lent itself more to this is more of a shift to the spread. And again, what the Saints run with a lot of punch looks.
Talking LSU football with Gordy Rush on 103.7 The Game. I found this next little tidbit interesting, Gordy. And Jimmy Ott didn't give it to me, but somewhere, somehow, I learned that odds makers have shifted Joe Burrow. He was 500-1 to win the Heisman about a week ago, and now he's in a lot of places 200-1. So I'm not coming to you for gambling advice, but I would ask you, what do you think is changing in the perception there?
Well, Jimmy Ott, obviously I got kids. I don't really, I'm not in tune with Jimmy Ott that has all the notifications to go off his phone when things like that, change the coin toss in the Super Bowl shifts overnight. He's gonna be able to inform you on that stuff. I think word's getting out what exactly we talked about that Burrow. First off, the offense has changed. A lot of people are confident in Burrow, but when you go to scrimmage and you see that Jeray Jenkins is making plays, I think 6'4", 195, and Trey Palmer has got a burst and. That's to go along with Jefferson, Chase, Marshall, Sullivan. LSU has a ton of weapons, not to mention these running backs can catch a football out of the field. John Emery has broken numerous runs and passes for long yardage and taken it to the house. Just from what I've seen, I would increase Burrow's chances based off of the offense and the talent surrounding him.
Give me a little bit more on one of the names you just mentioned, Trey Palmer. I know he was out the first week, maybe two, with the knee injury, I do believe. But what you've seen so far, the freshman from Kentwood.
Well, his ability to stretch the football field vertically has jumped out. He's had some big, big catches with that. And, I think for a true freshman, especially coming from a smaller classification school, really polished, right? As a wide receiver, a lot of times those guys are the quarterback, the receiver, the equipment manager and all the above. And that burst and having a chance to see him, in some of the return game, and we'll see if they utilize him, if he gets the look in that. He's got exceptional burst, and that's what's jumped out at me.
Defensively, set me straight on something, Gordy. I was of the mind coming into this year that Jacob Phillips was about to explode. And now all of a sudden, it seems like, there's an opportunity for other guys to get in there and maybe take some of that playing time. Patrick Queen, Damone Clark. So with Divinity moving inside linebacker, is his role, talking about Phillips, diminished?
Well, yeah, it's been competition, really. And one of the names that's gotten a lot of buzz has been Patrick Queen. And you're right. And, they had three of them on, maybe on the Butkus watch, which is kind of unique, especially three of them are the same two positions. Divinity moving back to the inside position. But, I think that you'll see him. But I think you'll see all three of them. Clark is more of a thumper. But the competition, in my opinion, is a weak side linebacker between Queen and Phillips. And Divinity who played that middle linebacker, John Aaron, in high school, and brings a lot of leadership qualities to the table, I think, playing the strong.
We'll finish on that side of the football. I was enamored, Gordy, with the film on Marcel Brooks coming out of Texas. Is there room for him in this secondary to play right away?
Well, you know, I mean, when you play 5 and 6 defensive backs, absolutely. And he has been impressive. And I mean, you talk about a lot of talent back there. And Dave Aranda's got a lot of options. Keep in mind, you know, you got Kerry Vincent Jr. that can then come in and play the nickel. He's fantastic at the nickel position. Now, my one question in the secondary, and I think you and I talked about it back in the spring, was when you have Stevenson and Delpit on the field at the same time, both of them are really great downhill and disruptive and, you know, and fantastic football players. But, you know, neither one of them, I think, is an exceptional man-to-man cover person. And so what does that look like? And so when you play some nickel and you play too deep over the top, we've seen Todd Harris, who was really, you know, had a nice year a year ago. Yes, and I think there's room. You know, the question is, who do you pull off the football field?
Gordy, it's always fun when we get to kick this thing off. Did you and the family get to catch your breath at all this summer, or did it never stop for you?
Well, no, we did a lot of summertime, but, of course, school starts now. My 6-year-old daughter had orientation July 29th, which I almost lost my mind about. So we're down to a 2-month summer here in Louisiana, but I'm going to get one more Saturday down in New Orleans at the Audubon Zoo and then lock and load it. Let's play football.
I'm with you. Look, make sure they got the welcome mat out. I'll be there for the Cajuns game the following week, so it's going to be a large time.
Yeah, good luck to the Cajuns this year. Coach Napier's done a fantastic job.
Gordy, thanks again for the time. We'll talk next Thursday.
Okay, Ben, thank you.
He's Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. We'll have him every Thursday at 5 p.m., and he's very valuable when he's telling you what he sees in practice and at scrimmage. I would contend he's more valuable even when you get the in-between week updates. Here's what I saw as I was, you know, reporting from the sideline. Here's what I know because, you know, I'm inside the locker room before, during, and after the game. So it's a luxury for us to be able to have him. I want to thank him again for coming aboard and doing the show here. I'll make note of one other thing he said at the end there, and I've done my best to express this to you. Over the last, say, I don't know, year, 18 months since Billy Napier has been the head coach, Gordy Rush said it there at the end, good luck to Napier and the Cajuns. He's doing a fantastic job. If it hasn't been blatantly obvious to you, then again, I'll express it and restate it. There wasn't a lot of love lost, especially going from Lafayette to Baton Rouge over the basin with those football programs and really those athletic departments. Still isn't, right, with Bob Marlin and Will Wade, but that's a horse of a different color. But especially going west to east, there wasn't a lot of love lost, and there was probably a lot of apathy moving east to west over the basin. It's very, very different now, and I think it's one thing when you hear Ruffin Rodrigue and I wax on that over and again. But it's important, and I just want to make sure you understand it. When Gordy comes on and says something like that, it's in large part because that's what they're hearing from Ed Orgeron, the guy that they're around every day. So there is a lot, and I mean a lot, of mutual respect that's going both ways over the basin. Having Rob Sale, having Jabbar Jalouk on the staff certainly isn't hurting, but I think Billy himself commands a lot of respect from over in Baton Rouge. That's a big deal, and it has jack squat to do with kissing the ring. It has everything to do with cooperation inside the state and keeping the best players inside Louisiana. Because as much as they like Billy, think through this. What's part of the other motivation here? Wouldn't you love some of these kids that maybe otherwise, hey, they're not going to you at LSU. Otherwise, they might go to Ole Miss. No, you'd probably rather see them at UL. And so I think there's a cooperation that's going to continue to pay dividends in recruiting. I'm just saying. What Gordy said there kind of triggered a memory for me, so I wanted to share. All right, we'll hit our first break of the hour. When we return, got some shade to throw. And the Astros are right in the thick of it. We'll take your phone calls as well. And then Sam Spiegelman in about 16 minutes talking LSU recruiting and some of the best prospects coming out of the Lone Star State 2019 and 2020. Don't go anywhere. Big hour in the program. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Great interview with Gordy Rush on the other side, and we'll get to double our pleasure. Great news, we'll have Sam Spiegelman aboard in about 12 or 13 minutes. Between discussions with those two, it's about the time every day where we are lucky enough. Our good friends at Patio Center, they permit us to throw shade. Before I do that, I told you that the Astros are right there in the thick of it. I just want you to know that they're not alone. And there's somebody else who, maybe after a little further review, nod to our friend Matt Moscona in Baton Rouge, maybe after further review, there's somebody else who deserves top billing. I'll get to that here in a moment. First, your daily reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. They've got the goods to render your patio game the best on the block. And whether you want everyone over or you want it all to yourself, you'll have exactly the look you want if you head to their website, patiocenter.com. But don't wait. Head there now. It's patiocenter.com. The kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
We'll get to you, Houston Astros, and your waste of a tremendous start from Justin Verlander and an historic night from Robinson Chirinos. But Clint, again, I think the top billing has to go to Jim Harbaugh. I'll introduce it. Let's collaborate on the shade here. In a new book that's out, Jim Harbaugh said, quote, unquote, it's hard to beat the cheaters. Yes, he means the Southeastern Conference. This, to me, gets filed under the category of even if you thought it, why on earth would you say it? Much less printed in a book. This wasn't taken out of context. Dude, it's your book. It's directly attributed to you. Now, I get the fact that you ain't scared, and that part's okay, I guess. You're not saying it under your breath, right? It's not being kind of just muttered. It's not something that you're hiding behind. It can't be confused. I get it. You're proud to say it. You're not backing down from it, but why would you say that? And are we to believe that there's not cheating going on in Ann Arbor? Come on, brother. This is major college football. As Dan Hawkins said, unfortunately, if you're not cheating, I guess, to this degree, go play intramurals. But this, to me, is just mind-blowing, Clint. I'll let you get in on the shade here because I know you wanted to. Jim Harbaugh on the SEC, it's hard to beat the cheaters.
I'm sorry, Jim Harbaugh. I can't take that seriously at all. It's not my fault that you haven't been able to beat the Ohio State Buckeyes. It feels like you would have had plenty of chances to do so. He's okay over in the Pac-12 back in the day, but, like, seriously, you want to complain about not being able to beat the cheaters, as you're putting them? Dude, these are probably some of the best teams in the entire country, and if you can't beat them, you know, why are you complaining about it whenever you need to try and get better? And don't complain about it, bro.
I swear I thought you were just about to say, if you can't beat them, join them. I can't imagine Jim Harbaugh coaching a team.
That would be
the
hilarious,
SEC. Not that he's less than qualified. It just would be an atrocity in terms of culture fit. Like, way worse than Les Miles because he doesn't carry the humor and kind of, you know, quirkiness with him. But, and I'll give him credit, too. You mentioned he was, I think you used the phrase maybe okay or pretty good. You said one of those two about his time in the Pac-12. Look, those were really good Stanford teams. I mean, they broke through a glass ceiling. That's football, maybe a grass ceiling as well. And they beat USC when nobody was beating those cats. He challenged the establishment and Pete Carroll at the time. Parlayed that into a job with the 49ers, and for a stretch, they were darn near elite at the professional level, right? Coached into a Super Bowl that was played in New Orleans before the lights went out. and they got beat by Baltimore. So I've got respect for Harbaugh, but I don't in any way, shape, or form respect this comment. What I respect more, frankly, is the guy that followed him at Stanford. I got more respect for David Shaw basically saying the SEC is stupid, and that's why they can afford to recruit the way they do. We've got academic standards here in Palo Alto, sir. That was funnier to me. Didn't think it was a smart move on his part, but it's smarter than what Harbaugh just said. I know, that's a low bar. Let's move it to the Astros. I don't get bent out of shape about losing regular season games. That's not what I'm about to say. But wasting two tremendous and historic efforts, that catches a little bit of shade for me. It's in Verlander, 9 innings, complete game, his first of the season, 11 Ks. He was tremendous. Problem is, he gave up 2 taters, solo shots that got the Astros beat 2-1. But, man, the run support for JV in what is an obvious AL Cy Young Award season for him, it's mind-boggling. The hitters deserve some shade except for Robinson Chirinos. And the backstop last night, Clint, was awesome. 4 for 4, got gunned down at third base, trying to leg out a triple, which, oh, by the way, would have given him the cycle for the ball game last night. So if you're recapping at home, the Astros had a pitcher go all 9 and fan 11. They had their starting catcher go 4 for 4 with a homer, a double, a single, and then a double that he got hit at third base and mowed down on trying to stretch it into a triple. So just a brutal, brutal night of support in the guy that was throwing it and the guy that was catching it. I think Chirinos and Verlander deserved a lot better.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PetioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Like Greg Jennings, man, just put the team on their back, though, and they got absolutely no support last night. And there should be no support or validation from Jim Harbaugh and his SEC cheaters tantrum that we just laid out for you. Hey, before we hit our halfway break in the 5 o'clock hour, don't forget live music every Thursday at the Tap Room River Ranch. And it's great because you don't pay a cover charge. It's great live and local music, and you get to enjoy it with some of the best-priced beer, liquor, and wine in town, especially given the atmosphere. You come pull up a chair in one of these leather chairs at the bar, Italian leather, I might add, and there's Eric Gotro tonight, 8 to 11, laying down the sound. And for one more Saturday, you can enjoy the same exact treatment. The Saturday Summer Music Series concludes in 2 days. Ariana Lyons does a great job behind the bar here at the Tap Room River Ranch, but she's very talented with the microphone as well. And so Miss Ariana Lyons playing Saturday from 8 to 11. Come check them out tonight or Saturday night. Even better, check them out tonight and Saturday night and have a great weekend at the Tap Room River Ranch. All right, when we return, we'll talk with Sam Spiegelman. Player analysis on LSU commit Coy Moore. Some of the other Rummel players that have made their way to LSU and UL. That, plus who might the Tigers be looking at along the offensive line? Important question remaining in this 2019 class. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Back into the Tap Room River Ranch. Top shelf might be debatable to describe the analysis from Clint and I. We'll take it if that man says so. There's no debating that it's top notch when you get Sam Spiegelman aboard. So let's go find him aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. I'll reintroduce him. It's our man Sam Spiegelman, Texas and Louisiana recruiting analyst for Rivals.com, part of the Yahoo Network. How are you, Sam?
Staying alive, Ben.
I think you're doing better than that, but I am glad that you're staying alive, and I think that LSU football especially recruiting receivers. They're doing a lot more than staying alive. Coy Moore from Rummel, the latest to pop. Give us a little bit of a player analysis capsule, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you know, Coy is one of the kids in this particular cycle I'm very familiar with, going back to when he was in eighth grade, getting ready to enroll Jesuit at the time. But he has developed so great over the years. I think arguably he's the best route runner in the entire country at this point. And when you think about Joe Brady's offense, you think about Michael Thomas in the slot. That's the same number one receiver. Now, you know, Coy and Michael Thomas are not the same receiver, so don't get me wrong, but you know, Coy, a fantastic route runner. He only has 4.6 feet, and I say only, right? That's amazing for a lot of us. He's still able to separate from even the best defensive backs in the country, as shown this offseason, this summer at different camps. He has worked on his hands. He's a very reliable pass catcher. He's incredibly athletic, great vertical, and fantastic body control to make kind of difficult grabs in the red zone as well. He is going to be a target monster in the LSU offense over the next couple of years, and at worst, he's going to be a safety blanket for a lot of these quarterbacks, but he's the kind of slot receiver, not just like Julian Edelman where you run a bunch of crossing routes. He can stretch the defense as well. I see him being a fantastic playmaker in Joe Brady's offense down the road.
So let me connect some dots, Sam, to a couple of other former Rummel Raiders that have moved on to the collegiate level. LSU fans obviously very familiar with Ja'Marr Chase, same position. And Chandler Fields, he got to campus this summer. He'll be playing for Billy Napier and the Cajuns. Give us a little bit on those two and maybe a history that Rummel's starting to build heading west to Baton Rouge. And to Lafayette as well.
Yeah, I think if it Coach Napier was going to get upset if you failed to mention Lafayette. it's just so funny. You know, Jay Roth is one of the first coaches I got really close with when I came to Louisiana. And Rummel is so notorious for these ground-and-pound attacks. But Ja'Marr going into his sophomore, junior years was the reason why Rummel wanted to open it up. They got a quarterback to come in Chandler Fields, and they got a young freshman who had to sit out his freshman season, Coy Moore. Those were the three pieces that they said, we're going to change the whole identity of the Rummel offense. And Chandler, you know, really underrated athleticism. You know, I think he's close to that 4.6 range for 40s, and I've seen him run with Coy, and he's a step behind. He's right there with him, but a fantastic, you know, pocket passer, extremely accurate. I understand he's probably not going to start this year, but I think he represents the future of that UL offense. Ja'Marr Chase has always been one of my favorite receivers to watch. It's almost, you know, we talk about Coy Moore running a 4.6 40. Ja'Marr is in that same range, 4.5, 4.6. And people always said he wasn't fast enough or he wasn't tall enough. Or Ja'Marr has kind of defied all the measurables. He is just one of the purest playmakers I've ever seen. There is nothing that Ja'Marr cannot do. And we saw that last year, right? It was kind of a running joke the first couple weeks of the season that Joe Burrow would throw it to Ja'Marr Chase and he would just fall out of the one. Or every time he caught a touchdown, he had 1 foot out of bounds. He knows how to get open. He has incredible hands. He finds holes in the defense so well. He's a great route runner. He can run short routes, intermediate routes, long routes. No matter what it is, he's always going to beat his guy in a one-on-one situation. I think he's in store to lead LSU in receiving this year.
Hey, quick detour. You mentioned the fact, and you're correct, by the way, that it doesn't look like Chandler Fields will start this year. That'll be Levi Lewis. What do you remember about him that sticks out from his days at Scotlandville?
He has a big arm, and he is a true athlete. You know, Levi is a great kid, and let me tell you about Levi. He used to stay after all these spring games and scrimmages. Levi would stay, so these things end, what, 9, 10, 10:30 at night sometimes. Levi would stay and do field work at Scotlandville, usually by himself. Maybe he would have one, two receivers stay with him. I remember during his recruitment, you know, he had been committed for so long to be a quarterback, but then he kind of opened up his recruitment because he has enough athleticism. He wanted to kind of see if anyone would take a shot on him as a slot receiver at the Power 5 level. And listen, if he had stumbled on that idea earlier on in his recruitment, I legitimately think that schools would have recruited him kind of like a John Trey Kirkland to play wide receiver, play in the slot. I certainly think he was capable of doing that, but you know, he wound up at UL. I think in that system, he is more than capable, high football IQ, and more so just a really hardworking guy, and that's what you want when that's your QB1.
few more moments with our guy, Sam Spiegelman, doing a great job putting a blanket over Texas and Louisiana when it comes to your recruiting needs for Rivals.com. Sam, give me the latest on LSU continuing to recruit offensive linemen in 2019. That position in this class, or for 2020, excuse me, it feels like the final piece to the puzzle. Who are they still in the game for there?
Yeah, this has kind of been, you know, for an LSU recruiting class so far, that's kind of got two four-star quarterbacks, you know, four of the best wide receivers in the entire country. They're all top 100 prospects overall. Obviously, DBs are never an issue with Corey Raymond and Bill Bush. And then, obviously, they got two of the best linebackers committed. And D-line through the roof. Excuse me, how am I overlooking D-line? This is Ed Orgeron's team. They have kind of stubbed their toe a little bit as it pertains to the offensive line. You know, Cedric Van Pran, the number one guy at number one center in the country, in our opinion, at Rivals, just committed to Georgia over the weekend. He was a huge target for LSU, but obviously LSU wasn't even the second, third, or fourth team for Cedric Van Pran. I think their biggest need is to kind of upgrade with another tackle. I know Marcus Dumervil out of Florida is their main guy, but they have stiff competition from Florida and Oklahoma in that regard. You know, I don't see they're offering guys out on the West Coast and the Mountain West right now, trying to reinforce that offensive line. It's the one weak spot of this class so far. One name I'll give you, he's already committed as a defensive lineman, but watch out for Cam Jackson out of the Haynesville area. About 6'6", 285. We had him work out at offensive tackle during our Rivals camp in New Orleans. He does not play with great leverage along the defensive line. We actually changed his position. I personally believe he's going to be an offensive tackle down the road at Baton Rouge, whether it's year one or year two, a lot like a Dar Rosenthal, or you see with Bray Parker, how LSU will take a great athlete, and you could figure out the position later. And Coach O is always going to give them the opening to work out at whatever position they want to. And if they see the competition being too stiff, or they don't see themselves liking that position too much, they can move afterward. But Cam Jackson is he's long, he's strong, he's got to obviously learn the technique, and that's where James Craig would turn in. But I think he's eventually going to be the offensive tackle in this class, and he's a guy that I could potentially see being a starter after a few years of developing his body and learning the craft.
Sam, if I'm not mistaken, Texas high school football has its regular season begin a week earlier this year than Louisiana. So as you get out to the gridirons, who are some of the top prospects you'll be monitoring, especially ones that maybe have some LSU leans?
Yeah, first game is about 1 week and 1 hour away. Cannot wait. It's going to be defending 6A champions, North Shore High School, home of the number one running back in the country, Zachary Evans, who has a top group of LSU, Bama, Georgia, and Texas A&M. He's going to play in the SEC. It's just a matter of where. And LSU was the first to offer him. And I had to look this up today, because I remember when they offered him. They offered him in the February when Kalavon Chaisson signed, you know, over 3 years ago before his freshman season. So he is a top priority for LSU. His quarterback, Demetrius Davis, is one of the main guys that LSU is after to be their quarterback in next year's group. And they also have a top 100 guard on that team, Jaden Roberts, who transplanted from Kansas this offseason. And he's going to be playing right tackle. And at right guard, Xavier Dubois camped at LSU and earned an offer in June. So there. And then if you look on the other side of the ball, there's a sophomore cornerback, Denver Harris, who's definitely a surefire top 50 prospect in the 2022 class. They all have LSU offers. LSU has recruited North Shore so well over the years. The second game I'll be going out to, Denton Ryan and Mesquite Poteet. A lot of guys that LSU likes there, including their 2021 defensive end, Jatavion Sanders, who's top 100 prospect in 21 for Rivals.com. Throughout the week, we're going to be seeing a bunch of guys that LSU would love to have. Right now, with their 2020 class being on the close to the brim, we're running out of senior targets for them to be looking at. But, you know, among the juniors, they're widespread. Hunter Washington is a guy who's going to be playing corner. He's a top 250 guy for us on Rivals. LSU loves him. They saw him at the joint LSU Tulane camp, and he's very open to LSU. He's someone I expect them to – a big fall as a junior would probably lead to an offer. I know Ohio State has already offered this summer. But that's just a tipping point. There is so much talent in Texas this year that LSU is after, and that's continuing into 21 and 22.
He is Sam Spiegelman, Rivals.com. Sam, keep getting by and doing your thing. You know we'll be following.
Appreciate it, Ben. Thanks for having me, bud.
Always pleasure here on this side of the table. And I got a break. We're a little late for it. But you got to let Sam roll while he's going. He's that good. When we return, try to get you ready for a little Thursday night football in the NFL, including a game north of the border. Is Antonio Brown ready to come out and play? We'll know soon. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out, having a lot of fun at the Taproom River Ranch on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Listening to 103.7 The Game. This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in one, final time during the 5 o'clock hour. Still having fun at the Taproom River Ranch. Yeah, they'll have live music here later tonight. We've been telling you about it, but don't forget Eric Gotro tonight, 8 to 11. And one final time in August, they'll do the Saturday Summer Music Series, Ariana Lions, same time frame, 8 to 11 this Saturday. CD, we've got some pro football tonight. 12 of the league's teams are in action. I'm going to run through the six games, and I'll start with the one that's actually occurring outside of this country, but inside of this continent. I'll explain. We got the Giants at the Bengals, leading things off tonight. Washington at Atlanta. Carolina at New England. Baltimore at Philly. Jacksonville at Miami. Be still, my beating heart. Everybody in Florida must just be enamored for that one. And finally, Green Bay versus Oakland, north of the border in Winnipeg, you hoser. And the biggest question here, I got to admit, I've just become an absolute – I'm a viewing slave to Hard Knocks, and I have been for about the last two or three years. I didn't have HBO for the first number of years that that thing was in existence, but HBO has got a hook in my mouth. I watched that show. I kind of remember last year that it synced up with the release of Ballers, and so I would typically try and watch them grouped together, right? Ballers starts up here shortly, so I'm back in there with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. When it's ready, I'll be there. But Oakland this year really hasn't been all that fascinating. Not nearly as much as Cleveland the year prior and some of the others that have preceded them. The biggest thing happening in Oakland is just every bit of drama that surrounds Antonio Brown. Did he freeze the bottom of his feet off? Can he run? Is the helmet that he wants eligible to play in the league? Is the new helmet that he chose still eligible to play in the league? Is he a team cancer, or, as in certain vignettes that you get with him and John Gruden, is he kind of just a misunderstood guy who, you know what, seems to be loving of his teammates and they love him? He's the enigma, but he's really the only thing that Hard Knocks has going this year, and he ain't my favorite cup of tea. His drama ain't my favorite thing, put it to you that way. So Hard Knocks has lost some sizzle for me this year. But tonight, in Winnipeg, we'll see if he makes his debut. Will he catch some balls from Derek Carr? Can Oakland be a team that wins more than three or four games this year? I kind of sort of doubt it. But I'll get your two cents on that. Don't know how much, if any, that we'll see of Aaron Rodgers and this Packers team that has been without Jordy Nelson, now they're without Randall Cobb and kind of having to reinvent the wheel a little bit there. And then on the Oakland side, will the AB train leave the station?
I think we'll see AB out there because I think one of the biggest things that we've always heard about is that third preseason game, especially now with the new rules that are in place where it's a 90-man roster up until after week four wraps up. I think we'll see AB play a little bit. I'll go with one series. I think we'll see the AB train leave the station, and I'll leave the same for a guy, Aaron, with his Canadian tuxedo that he was rocking when he made his way over to America's hat known as Canada.
That is remarkable. I have not seen that yet. See, that's the one thing. When I'm out on a remote, you got to understand. Chandler Rome accused me of inside baseball earlier. Here's a little inside baseball when it comes to radio. If I were to use the same laptop that I'm on to operate this show to scroll the internet, I'm out there diluting the internet. I can't slow down the latency just so that I can have the latest on social media. But you're canvassing that bad boy for me, so I haven't seen this yet. Are you telling me that he went full-on denim from head to toe?
Yeah, denim on denim with the full Canadian tuxedo and add the fact he had a mustache. But the one that's capturing all the headlines, Ben, is when the Raiders arrived to Winnipeg, one of the players actually was rocking a Winnipeg T-shirt, but instead of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, it had Winnipeg, Alberta. How do you mess that up on a T-shirt?
Yeah, I know all of my provinces of Canada back and forth. You've got a better chance at getting me to name the 50 state capitals, and unless they've added or subtracted one, as memory serves from 8th grade in Louisiana history, the 64 parishes of our great state in Louisiana. Hey, we'll finish the hour. This was pretty cool. Damn you. I got to leave it up to receiving messages through other channels because you don't feed me with this kind of stuff. Our good friend Tommy reached out and said that he tried to call during the Throwing Shade segment, but we ran out of time. And so here's the exact message that I got across. Tommy, your words will be heard on air. It's a good compliment, and it's not just for me, so I'll share this here. Tommy said, I've been out of state for 5 weeks. Kudos to you and RP3. In 4 days, y'all made it possible for me to catch up on high school, college, and Saints football. He had some more to say that I'll get to momentarily, but, you know, that's a good reminder. Sometimes you feel like, you know, you recycle some things from 1 hour to the next, 1 day to the next. You never know when old boy or old girl is out there and out of the country or out of state. Maybe after, like, the Saints lost to the Rams, I know that our guy Frank and others, they just had to kind of, you know, burrow and dig a hole, and they didn't want to hear about sports for a week or two. So I'm glad that we're able to catch up to speed that quickly, and we'll make sure to get to the important topics of the matter all the time. It's what we do. The other part of what Tommy had to say, after I interviewed Gordy Rush, I gave you my 2 cents on the relationship between UL and LSU football and how things have thawed. I'm glad Tommy took note. He said, as to your comments about the feelings between UL and LSU, you are right on. Can only be good for both programs. Let's drop House United and embrace House United. Hey, man, I'm in favor of that. And you're talking to a guy that, I've admitted this before on the show, I'm a member of the RCAF. I've had season tickets now for 3 straight years. And yet I've covered probably 100-plus LSU games. A lot of love there. A lot of my family went there. I'm all for the House United thing. And I don't think you'll have to convince too many LSU fans that it's an okay idea in this area either. But that vocal minority of Cajun fans, I don't think you're twisting that arm that way. Just thinking out loud here. Taking a quick break. When we return, another half hour of the good stuff. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to ride. Hour number 3 underway. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. For the next half hour, the famous Clint D., he's with us, I don't know, in spirit, most days in person as well, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. normally, this is where Blaine Viator joins and we talk high school football. Blaine's a little under the weather. My dude, you better get your voice right. And I'll tell all of our listeners why right now. We're going to call the Carencro Bro Bridge Kiwanis Jamboree ball game a week from tonight. And so kickoff there is expected for about 7:15. I'll rush out of the tap room. I'll join Blaine at Cajun Field. 6:45, we'll have a pregame show. And then a quick little Jamboree battle between Pomp Bro and Carencro. I'm fired up about that. Really am. So, Blaine, get better. Be ready for next Thursday. We've got some alternate programming planned for you. I want to go in on LSU football with some great sound we've had this week. Before we do that, though, Clint, one of my favorite things to do every Thursday when we're here at the tap room, I love bringing barroom topics to the show. I got in a, not a heated, but I got in a passionate and a fun discussion during a break with some people about their favorite stakes for fantasy football leagues. And almost all of their conversations centered around money. I informed one of the guys that one of the leagues I'm in and have been in for years now is a shaming league where actually losing on a weekly basis brings upon the lowest score. All right, so that type of losing, it brings upon you some things that I won't say on the air, but they're not, you know, favorable. And losing the league for the year, I mean, being the last place finisher ensures that you're about to have a really bad 8 or 9 months of your life. It's just not going to be a good time. And this was just revolutionary for this person. They're like, I didn't know that kind of thing existed. That would mean more to me than winning some money. I said, exactly. That's why we do it. We like to see our friends and family squirm a little bit. So, I don't know, Clint, I'll get your take on that real quick. And maybe there's an opportunity for my bumper-to-bumper sports fantasy draft next Wednesday to become a shaming league. I don't know that we want to put the, you know, the repercussions on air. I don't want to get, you know, bopped over the head for hazing, but I'm telling you, it's a different level.
It really seems like it's on a different level compared to when you just put it, you brought it up perfectly, the money stakes. There's a lot of stakes in there, but every week if it's somebody with the lowest score, it definitely has a little bit of the league flavor. I'm not talking about just a generic fantasy league. I'm talking about the league, that show that used to be back on FX back in the day.
Yeah, and then FXX. I'm very fond of it.
Yes.
But I'll tell you this right now. Maybe for many listening, the opportunity to win, I don't know, $200, $2,000 is greater than the opportunity to shame a close friend or family member, like a brother, for example. I don't know. Maybe for you, the money is better. For me, it is not. Just something to chew on for a little bit. We got time. We can get some of your reactions. 706-0111. While we wait on it, I promise some LSU discussion. And some of the best we had this week came from Shea Dixon as well as Glenn Gilbo. First, let's hear from Shea Dixon. Go247.com. And he gave his 2 cents on both of LSU's quarterbacks. Here's Shea on the 2019 edition of Joe Burrow.
We know what we're getting in Joe Burrow, right? Like, Joe Burrow was an unknown commodity at this time last year. He hadn't started a game since his senior year of high school. So to go put it into perspective, Ben, he graduated college before he ever started a college football game, and we still didn't know what he brought to the table. And after a full year, a New Year's Six Bowl, you get it. And this offense is going to spread it around a little bit more. Justin Jefferson said the other day, look, I'll put good money on it that I don't double up all the receivers again and catches. His point being that they're really spreading it around. They've got the rapport with Joe Burrow. They like this Ensminger Joe Brady offense. And
how about that? Spread the wealth, not just because you think it's a good idea or it sounds good on paper, but because you've got that many options and a quarterback, most importantly, who could trigger the attack. All right, from Burrow to Brennan, he just had a really big scrimmage. Here's Shea Dixon, an LSU's backup that's starting to gain some luster.
I'll shoot you straight. Look, people are so nitpicky, and that's just being a fan, right? You're a fanatic. But Miles Brennan can be hot and cold, and, you know, he needed to add weight, and he did. And, you know, he's got great numbers in one scrimmage, and then he throws some picks, and is he indecisive? I'll tell you this, and this is from Miles in high school to now, and you know his arm strength, and you know the arm he has. I mean, he's got a better arm than Joe Burrow. when you're looking at your backup, they've got a guy who's capable of going out there and doing it. We thought he might be the starter last year, and now he's going to get a two-year gap to it. And I think, Ben, people still think, oh, well, he's got so much growth, and he does, but he's better than anything else they've had. I mean, he's better than Brandon Harris and Anthony Jennings and I think Danny Etling and all these different guys. Obviously, Etling was a bit older, but point being, they're in a really good spot for the first time in a long time.
Better than Danny Etling. That's a nice statement there, but I get what he's saying about the age disparity. All right, there's the best from Shea Dixon as we're getting some LSU sound coming to you in our 6 o'clock hour. Clint, what do you say we hear from Glenn Gilbo next?
I don't do practice, man.
I had a feeling that was going to happen. For those that have no idea where that came from, Glenn joined me yesterday when I was out at Twin Peaks on Johnston via the phone. I was excited for a post-practice report. I said, Glenn, how was practice? And then Clint, one more time, Glenn's response to that inquiry?
I don't do practice, man.
Straight up Allen Iverson stuff. What he does do is give hot takes. And if he thought LSU's offense was being overhyped, oh, that would be the guy that would tell you. But right here, I think you'll hear quickly. That's not the case.
No, I do believe it because Coach O is a lot more accurate in his press conferences than Coach Miles was. And the players have been, not making up stuff either the way I see it. I think the offense really is good with Burrow in his second year. And the defense has struggled at times from what I've heard and read. And from what Coach O says, the only time the defense dominated in the scrimmage was when Burrow was hurt. But that's new. You know, it's usually not like that, but it makes sense. I mean, it's not a reach. Burrow's in his second year, and much like Mettenberger, when he was in his second year, did really well. And there's a lot of continuity with Ensminger coming back, and he's got good receivers. So, I think the offense is going to be good.
We'll keep it going as we get some LSU flavor your way. The best from first Shea Dixon and now Glenn Gilbo with the Daily Advertiser. Sticking with the offense, this one might surprise you. Glenn gives his take on who LSU's leading rusher will be this season.
What's that, the running backs?
Yep.
Oh, no, I don't. That's that's one of those summertime things you hear about using several running backs. And usually what happens is it comes down to about two. And I think that's what it's going to be. I think it's going to be John Emery, the main back, and then the second back will either be Clyde Edwards or one of the other freshmen. But I think you're going to see John Emery most of the time.
How about that? I mean, no concession or allowance that he'll grow into that, just straight up. He thinks that the freshman will be the first back, or the lead back, at least. Clint, let's move it along and switch it over to the defensive side. G-squared, Glenn Gilbo, his take on this defense, is it going to be better than the 2018 unit?
I think they may be better than last year. I think the defensive line is better with Apu, true freshman addition at nose guard, and with Tyler Shelvin developing. Then you got solid starters coming back in Breen Fajoco and Rashard Lawrence and Farrell and Logan are good too. The linebackers and DBs are always good at LSU. And I don't think they're going to lose a lot, even with losing Devin White and Greedy Williams. I don't think they're going to lose anything in the secondary, with Stingley and Fulton and Grant Delpit and Jacoby Stevens. I think they're going to be real good in the second. They might not be quite as good without Devin White at linebacker, but they got Chase on back, who wasn't there last season.
Great perspective, and we got one more dose of it coming at you here. Glenn Gilbo, his take on the LSU-Texas game, and not just the X's and O's, the atmosphere, everything that's going to come with week two in Austin.
It's really a game that should have been played for years. You know, when you look at it, LSU should have been playing Texas all these years instead of Texas A&M, you know, before A&M joined their conference. You know, that was one of their non-conference foes going way back to the 70s. I think it would have been better to play Texas more regularly. You know, two big state schools right next to one another. And they haven't played in the regular season since 1954. So it's, you know, historically it's a great game. And then when you look at it, in recent events, you know, LSU tried to hire Tom Herman, who's the Texas coach, and LSU and Texas have both been kind of hovering around but not being quite good enough for the playoffs, and here they are where this might be the year for, you know, each of them have a better year going in, better chance going into this season than they have had. Whichever team wins, if the other team continues to play well, it's really going to help them as they try to get into the playoffs, particularly like if LSU beats Texas and Texas keeps playing well and LSU wins out except for Bama, they could still get in the playoffs, I think, because of a game like Texas, if they can win it.
And, oh, by the way, I agree with him. So always interesting when you get on some of the brightest that are covering the LSU beat. Shea Dixon a little more day-to-day. He ain't afraid of a little practice. In fact, I just saw Shea on Twitter right now. He is at the U-High St. Charles Catholic scrimmage. He's out there filming Jaquellen Roy, LSU D-line commit, who, just trust me, I watched the videos during some of Shea's quotes here on the program. Isn't that ironic? Don't you think? And Jaquellen Roy just crushing it right now in a scrimmage for U-High, disrupting everything in the backfield. So the big D lineman looking awfully good. So our thanks. Some repurposed and great sound from Shea Dixon and then Glenn Gilbo. Here we go into our final extended break of the program. Why do I say that? Well, because we've got a world's shortest segment audition coming up at 6:30 before Astro launch at 6:35. On the other side of this break, I mention an upcoming jamboree, Karen Crow Bro Bridge. I want to go a little deeper and pull at that thread. So stick with us. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you. Final extended segment. That's how I should say that. From the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
20 minutes after 6 o'clock, right back into the place to be tonight, darn sure, and just about every night, the Tap Room River Ranch. We'll open up the phone lines for you at 706-0111. But, Clint, you know me. I had an opportunity to talk high school sports briefly a moment ago. Now it's on the brain. So let's head right back there. I want you to give me the rundown. Give me in order the three Thursday night games at the Kiwanis Jamboree. We'll pause for a little bit. I want to react. And then the three Friday night games. And I do promise our listeners this. We're going to get more into the other jamborees outside of the ones being played at Cajun Field early next week. So trust me on that. But this schedule is out first. It's an opportunity for the high school kids to play on a college stage, so we'll start with it. Give me the three Thursday games.
All right, the three Thursday games, I definitely think they're going to be filled with intrigue, starting things off. Lafayette High, Cecilia will open things up, and then sandwiched right in the middle of that, I'm definitely looking forward to this one. It is Karen Crow taking on Bro Bridge, and the final one on Thursday night, Como taking on Northside.
So my reaction is this. Lafayette High has got a chance this year to go from being winless two seasons ago. Last year they took home three dubs, and this year they could get closer to 500. Not going to say that's their absolute ceiling, but in that district it's tough in 3-5A. And Cecilia with Dennis Gaines, we know they've got a lot of talent. We know that Raymond Calais' brother is ready to ball this year. But Lafayette High is the team even without Corin Norman, who's now, I believe, walking on at LSU. There's a chance for Rob Poole's team to be improved. Certainly one to watch. That middle game, in case you just missed it, at 6 o'clock, we made an announcement. We will carry the Karen Crow Bro Bridge game from Cajun Field live on 103.7 The Game. Fired up from that. Myself, Blaine Viator, will have a pregame show at 6:45 and then kickoff expected around 7 or 7:15. That one will be fun. Bro Bridge, a real player in that old 5-4A district last year, hosted a playoff game. And then, obviously, Karen Crow, 4-1 CD last year in a tough 4-4A district. So we'll see how they respond and how improved they are this year under Tony Corville. As for the other game, I know a little more about Northside, having seen them in person the last few years, but I think there's a lot more expected from Como. Veteran-laden group that's got some college-level talent there, so excited for that. So those are your three matchups on Thursday. How about the three games Friday night? Or, as some of my Cajun fans, friends, like to refer to them, the games are going to keep me from going to New Orleans to party for the Cajuns game early.
All right, Ben, we were talking about Northside to end off Thursday night. Friday night, we get our first ever look at the Southside Sharks. They'll be taking on Notre Dame, and Terling's going to have a fun matchup with the Acadiana High, the Wrecking Rams, and the Rebels going to square off in that middle game. And then the nightcap, the STM Cougars taking on St. Martinville. Going to be a lot of fun to see that one as well.
Southside. They competed very favorably with Westgate, at least in one of the two games with St. Thomas More and the quick slant 7-on-7. So I think from a skill position standpoint, they're not going to be far, at least not that far off the pace in 3-5A to be competitive at a minimum. I'm interested to see if they've got some of the size and the depth up front on both sides of the line. So Coach Fontenot's group, you want to be tested along your lines? Yeah, play Notre Dame. That will do it for you. Terlings versus Acadiana. I know my partner in crime, Blaine Viator, thinks Acadiana could well be the best team in this area this year. They'll get their chance to start to flex there. Veteran running backs, veterans all over the place, frankly. And Terlings this year under Dane Chipanche, life after Thomas Perry, I think they're going to be okay. They've got a lot of big uglies up front on the O-line that just love to pull and push people out of the way. So we'll see what Samuel LeBlanc and company could do for the Rebels. That last game might be one of the most intriguing in the area, not just for the Kiwanis Jamboree. We know what St. Thomas More represents. We get the fact that Caleb Holstein's one of the best gunslingers in the state, the Harvard commit. St. Martinville, what is Vince Derwan's team going to do after last year becoming a top four seed in a really tough Class 4A district? Undefeated in the regular season. They were spectacular and putting a star on St. Martin Parish in 2018. So how are they going to follow it up in 2019? I'm interested to see as well. And, of course, all these teams will start to play each other in the regular season, for that matter. St. Martinville is at Cecilia, supposed to open up at their brand-new stadium. We'll see if that comes to fruition in week one. And so these teams get familiar. Heck, tonight I know for a fact that you got a lot of scrimmage action that's going on. You've even got some teams from outside of the area that are coming into the area to get down. So this is your scrimmage week. We just gave a little bit of a nod toward your Jamboree week. And then, of course, you're going to have the real thing starting Friday, September the 6th. And I'll do this for memory, Clint. You correct me where I'm wrong, but I want to make sure everybody understands part of our game plan. I told you, as a specialty broadcast, Blaine and I will carry Karen Crow versus Bro Bridge from Cajun Field in the Kiwanis Jamboree next Thursday, pregame 6:45, kickoff expected around 7:15. But on a week-in, week-out basis, we'll continue our football night in Acadiana pregame and postgame shows. St. Thomas More football will continue to live on 103.7 The Game. Blaine and I will keep rolling with Karen Crow football on Z105.9. You may have heard it was the best high school broadcast in the state last year. Okay, enough of that shameless plug. But true, we're proud to introduce on Mustang 107.1 this year, Southside High Sharks football. We'll continue to have the Vermilion Parish Game of the Week on 106.3 Radio Lafayette. Plenty of Kaplan and Erath and Abbeville and North Vermilion and VC. It's going to be a fun year. And also, on the Rewind, on 104.1, that's our signal over in the Lake Chuck area. We'll continue to have Barb for a second straight year, and the Lafayette High Mighty Lions, Rob Poole's group, will be on our Lafayette signals for the Rewinds. So you'll hear them on 97.7 FM and 1330 AM. And so trust me when I tell you, between all of that live coverage on the air, between all of the written word, videos, and more that we're going to have on 1037thegame.com, Delta Media is ready to roll with your high school football coverage throughout the fall of 2019. And trust me when I tell you that your boy here is pretty excited. I had the chance, I guess I could let this cat out of the bag, right? He probably wouldn't mind, but George Faust hollered at your boy, and we did a little TV earlier today talking Karen Crow and football throughout Acadiana. I believe that's going to air Saturday on KLFY TV 10. So it is not just football season. It's high school football season, fam. You know I'm fired up about that. All right, world's shortest segment audition. When we return, still hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.